Hello, and welcome to the Daily Soundbite. My name is Samantha Slade, and this week we'll be focusing on oppression at UW. In this episode, we'll hear from news editor Mo Klob on the Global Health Department's discussion on institutionalized racism, and Killer Mike's talk at the Hub. Kelsey Hamlin will tell us about author and television host Torre's lecture on microaggressions, and Julia Gray Sanders reports on the registrar's long-awaited decision to add a preferred name option. All to come on the Daily Soundbite. News editor Mo Klob reported on the April 4th Global Health Department Forum between students, faculty, and staff to discuss institutional racism.
So there was a meeting last Monday that was originally planned in the Global Health Department to address like racial inequity, but a lot of students had a problem with that because they don't believe administration in the department and in UW at large has like enough like racial analysis and like racial literacy to like facilitate that kind of conversation. So the format was changed kind of that same day after those claims about them being unequipped to manage that. And it was changed to kind of like an airing of grievances and discussing like what are the issues. And this all came after a black advisor was held at gunpoint, he said, by university police right before spring break. And he's currently on leave and there's an investigation. So not much is known still about what happened, but it didn't upset a lot of people because, you know, the average like white person, especially an employee at the university, is not going to be held up outside their office by university police. So there's demands like that students have made, like community police review board and diversifying, like committing resources to diversify faculty and the student body. And that's kind of what this meeting was about. And it was talking about to a lot of the global health faculty that were there, and how they've kind of deflected blame when being talked about racial issues, and that's kind of now what students want to see from their professors.
The heated discussion concerned racism both in the Global Health Department and at UW in general.
The way the discussion worked was sort of just like anyone could raise their hand to speak. A lot of people were reluctant, as I mentioned, because they said it was hard to speak without knowing exactly what happened to the advisor. But, you know, not a lot of people know the details because there's still an external investigation happening. A lot of people spoke up. One person, her name is Anu Taranath, I think. Yeah. She is, like, facilitating it. She's actually a faculty in CHID and in English, but she's been, like, for the Department of Global Health doing, like, undoing racism workshops. And she kind of facilitated it and got people talking. But a lot of people spoke to the chair of the Department of Global Health. Her name is Judy Wasserheit, just about like how they believe her racial literacy is low and how she needs to take a step back because she sort of contributed to the aggression that's happening in the department. And they want her to just listen, learn, and like sort of own up to her role. So it was a lot of students talking and faculty listening. But the faculty in the end sort of said they were willing to start like looking through some of these changes and addressing the demands that are in play right now. There's, I think, seven of them. One of them is that the university recognize the land it's built on and change some of the names of the streets, especially where the intellectual house is located. There is a demand to address admissions practices and increased recruitment of black and other underrepresented students and faculty. Criminal history, reporting your criminal history, that section be removed from undergraduate and, like, graduate applications in recognition of the fact that, like, students of color are disproportionately targeted by the criminal system. And then, community policing and review boards. And then a couple more, like, student-led committees for tackling, like, the institutional racism on campus because they believe the Race and Equity Initiative has not done enough thus far. The aftermath of just that forum, everyone knew, and it was actually said that it wasn't going to be, like, a big healing ceremony or something that would have gotten too overambitious, but the global health faculty were going to look through the demands and like plan and speak to each other, because like, you know, a lot of planning has to happen on the end of people with the actual power to make the change. So faculty is going to be doing that, and then there will be further meetings, I believe, in April to discuss moving forward. I just think that this is like largely relevant to people outside of global health too, and that what's happening, like they mentioned, what's happening in their department is just indicative of what's happening at large at the university, and that these issues need to be tackled sooner rather than later because they're not going anywhere, and life can be significantly harder for students of color even at a public university like this.
In addition to the Global Health Forum last week, news editor Mo Klob reported on Killer Mike's event at The Hub. Killer Mike is a rapper and activist who has recently been campaigning on behalf of presidential candidate Bernie Sanders.
Killer Mike is a rapper out of Atlanta. He actually used to work with Outkast, who's probably like the most popular rap group from Atlanta, Georgia. But he didn't gain like fame on his own until like recently. He had a solo album in 2012, and then he's most famous for being part of the rap duo Run the Jewels, which is him and his friend LP, who is a producer. So he produces and raps with Killer Mike. Yeah, they have another album coming out this year. Killer Mike came to The Hub last Friday to talk about social activism and not as much rap music, although he answered some questions in the Q&A session about that. But he basically just like gave a talk about like what the values like that are motivating him right now are. And he had just like a serious and urgent tone to it, which I don't think a lot of people were expecting, but he kept it kind of light with a lot of jokes, which I mentioned in the article.
During his talk, Killer Mike implored the audience to more critically examine their own views and open themselves up to new ways of interacting with the world.
One of the things he said that kind of resonated, I think, with a lot of people, he was saying, if all your friends look like you, you might need to like diversify your friend group, because the kind of like life experiences that you encounter and are like discussing on a daily basis are limited, and then you can't really like empathize with people who have different sorts of struggles. I think that really resonated with a lot of people. Like the average working class, like white dude is not like the oppressor, you know? He's talking about how there is like a political elite who's essentially like pitted most of America against each other. And he's talking about how he saw these two, like this, like one, like Obama politician from that administration, and like someone who was like heavily involved in the Iraq war, like just like chatting it up and chumming it up at this event he was speaking at, and that just like really got him pissed, because he's like they're allowed to be friends while pitting everyone else against each other and dividing things by party lines. So he kind of just wanted people to, he said, like, don't be afraid to like destroy your party like alliances, and you know, be above that rhetoric.
Killer Mike called upon the audience to advocate for change in the now, rather than simply hoping that it'll occur in the future.
It's coming from a lot of places. Obviously, like, he's growing up, or not growing up, I'm sorry, his kids are growing up in a time where, you know, it's somewhat dangerous, depending on where you live, to be black in America. And if it's not dangerous, then you're at a disadvantage in a lot of ways. So he's coming in a place, he actually made a joke about, he's like, well, like, I don't care about my kids, like, they're assholes. I want, like, a better world for me now. He's like, why do we have, like, this sense to, like, delay that, you know? And then a quote that I thought was particularly, like, impactful. He said, I refuse to accept another right or privilege for me unless it's for everyone. And he said, if you don't want that for everyone, then you're probably a selfish asshole.
On April 5th, UW hosted Torre, current co-host on MSNBC's The Cycle and author of several books, including Who's Afraid of Post-Blackness? What It Means to Be Black Now. The lecture was part of UW's Equity and Difference series, which aimed to start a discussion around the difficulties minorities face.
Basically, Torre is, you know, this journalist, and he was pre-decided to host this, basically, and it was like lecture format. And yeah, basically going into it, we just knew it was going to be on microaggressions. The UW Alumni Association put it on for the most part. And you know, he the way he has gone about his job career, like, we know that he's hosted with NBC and he's done, like, shows on Black History Month and everything, and he himself is Black. And so you kind of expected it to be, you know, focused on his life dealing with microaggressions, but ends up not really being like that. So it was interesting. He just kind of took this format, like a Kanye-like format, but not that extreme, of just making sure that you support yourself and value yourself while the world kind of deals with Trump supporters and, you know, people who are really racially biased and have microaggressions and not, don't even know it and don't even want to educate themselves, you know, and the ways to protect yourself from that was really his main focus. Took a route that no one really expected, and it was definitely an interesting and valid route for sure, although I wouldn't say it's accessible for everyone, which...
To the surprise of many audience members, Torre argued that it is not the job of the oppressed to educate others.
The concept of self-preservation was a new one that I hadn't heard from like the Black community or a person of color community or minority. Because normally, like, the goal is to educate other people and to learn what they're, like, point out what they're doing wrong and ways to, like, improve in that thought process for them. But he just basically was like, disconcern yourself with that. That's not your issue. That's their problem. And that is surprising because, you know, that's not what our generation really functions with. So, and the audience had some issues with that as well. And obviously no one was, like, particularly angry about it, but it's a pretty hard concept to accept when it's something, you know, that is so degrading to you all the time. There wasn't really a solution, because people did ask, there wasn't really a solution to, or like an alternative, I should say, to educating other, or like not educating other people, I guess. It was really just like, you know your value, know your worth, like trust in yourself, and just know that when they address you as being a problem, that's a problem that they're admitting they have within themselves, and it's not a reflection of you. And yeah, he just kind of like put the educating part to the side. And honestly, I think it's probably reflective of his career, and he's probably just getting to the point where, you know, because it's emotionally and mentally taxing for anyone to be constantly frustrated by trying to better other people. And obviously when you're doing that, it's not bettering yourself necessarily. It's just this external thing. And he did say at one point, like, it's more of an internal zen than anything else for what he was trying to get across. Because for him, like, harboring that bitterness is what really hinders you, like, with your own growth. And so he was just trying to find ways to deviate.
The talk was initially billed as focusing on the concept of microaggressions.
So microaggressions for him was just, you know, these little things that play out in everyday life that essentially just reassert your, like, hierarchy level or your, like, higher position. I don't want to say of power, because when people hear that, they kind of take it more negatively than it really is, but, you know, just your higher social status, basically. Just reiterating that, you know, the person that you're talking to or whatever is on the marginalization side of things, and you're just kind of furthering that and perpetuating it in your microaggression. And essentially, like, an example of this that he used was he was hosting an MSNBC show, and it was during Black History Month, and the show itself, of course, was focused on Black History Month, and he was, like, getting ready for it, and he was the only person of color in, like, a room of 50 people, you know, and, like, all these people are, like, doing their cameraman things or getting everything ready, and one of them, of course, jokes, like, why do we have to do this? Like, why isn't there a White History Month? And, you know, that is a microaggression for sure, and his reaction to that, because he was the only Black person in the whole room, was, like, you know, I want to say something, but I also, like, don't want to, because I don't have to deal with just that entire, you know, realm of, like, 50 people being like, what the heck, to my reaction to it. But at the same time, because he's Black, he feels like he needs to, like, assert that that's incorrect, you know. And so that's one of them. Another one is just, like, locking your car door when you see, like, a person of color walking by. You know, just these simple things that you might not even think of mean anything, but they do.
Last week, Julia Grace Sanders reported that after a 5-year fight, the UW registrar would finally be implementing a preferred name option.
UW Registrar is adding a preferred name option for students who don't go by their legal names. And it's going to show up on class rosters for now, but hopefully in the future be extended to things like your Husky card or MyUW and other things like transcripts, potentially. The registrar presented her preferred name plan to the IT department last week, and she said that she hopes to have the actual plan open to the public within the next 2 weeks. And she said that her main goal is getting the preferred name option open for class rosters by the end of spring quarter. Class rosters have proven to be kind of the biggest issue with students and preferred names in the past. So that's kind of the registrar's main focus at this point. And then nothing beyond that is promised, but it's being worked on.
The preferred name option had long been a source of contention for several groups of students.
It's been an issue for transgender students that when they get to the first day of class and their legal name is read off the class roster, their professor accidentally outs them. The policy is going to be important not only for transgender students, but also for international students and just students who go by something other than their legal name. And it's really important not only so that students aren't outed by their professors on accident, but also to foster a sense of identity in students and the ability for them to be able to self-proclaim who they are through their name. The Q Center has been advocating for this since 2011, along with different students along the way, and ASUW Senators Roy Taylor and Alice Crow presented a resolution last February proposing a preferred name option, and they have been meeting with the registrar ever since, but it hasn't gained traction until the new registrar, Helen Garrett, came in February, and since then she's kind of championed the movement.
Previously, under these circumstances, students preferring not to spend the time nor the $171 fee required for a name change in King County were forced to come up with other solutions.
Since they haven't gotten a lot of traction in the past, they've come up with a lot of creative ways to work around the legal name system. And up until now, what they've done is change their legal name to their legal initials. So if your name, like my name, Julia Gray Sanders, I could go by JG Sanders. I hope it leads to other options that allow students that don't go by their legal name to go by their preferred name. I know that students would love to see this extend to their transcripts and their diplomas and other important documents in their life that they feel is an important place to have their preferred name.
That's it for this week's Soundbite. Thanks for tuning in. You can follow us on Twitter at UW Daily Podcast.